This episode of Continuing Mission is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/TrekFM. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the non-profit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello, I'm Tony Robinson, and welcome to Continuing Mission. Aaron Van de Klee is a young, aspiring, and incredibly talented actor and filmmaker. Suddenly emerging on the fan film scene with his two short movies, The Needs of the Many and The Derelict, both short films set in the NX-01 Enterprise time period, he amazingly won a top fan film production award against some established competition. We'll hear about that and more as we step into the turbo lift and go and meet with Aaron Van de Klee. Aaron Van de Klee, welcome to Continuing Mission.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, great to have you. And you're picking up a lot of notoriety with your two movies that you made. How far apart were these two movies, Derelict and...
The first one we made in the end of 2015, and this one is the middle of 2017, so about 2 years.
Okay, right. And so let's go back and talk about the movies, the first one, which was Needs of the Many. Let's talk about how did this come about? You suddenly woke up one night in bed and said, I've got a brilliant idea. I'm going to do this movie and it's going to be called Needs of the Many.
Well, it actually came about for that year. One of my friends challenged me to make 7 short films in a year. And Needs of the Many was actually the 7th short film in this sort of random series. It wasn't supposed to be a Star Trek story. I was doing a radio play at the time, War of the Worlds, on stage, and I was just sort of fascinated by the dependence on people's voices. And so we had two characters who were in a disaster situation, and that's what I basically wrote. And it didn't have to be a Star Trek story. I just happened to have some of the set pieces, and I decided to put it in the Star Trek universe, and that's basically its inception.
Wow. So that is interesting. So the question is, why did you have set pieces? Why did you build set pieces of NX-03 or 4 or 5 or whatever it was?
When I was younger. I was making like Doctor Who fan films just for myself. Like, they were never online or anything like that. And from that, I learned how to make sets and props and things like that. And so I wanted to do a little sort of Star Trek film, and I made a couple of set pieces, but I never used it. That sort of idea never came about. So I sort of had them sitting in my spare room for a good, like, maybe 5 years, and I never touched them. And so they were sort of laying about, and I thought I might as well get some use out of them and do a Star Trek story.
Wow. Well, that's kind of odd, isn't it? I mean, not odd in a bad way, but to have set pieces of corridors or doorways or hatches or something, but there must have been an original purpose for those when you started building them.
Yeah, so to do like a little sort of fan film, I mean, I guess, but yeah, I just didn't end up using them, and I just sort of left them there. And at the time, like, they were quite expensive to put together, so I wasn't gonna dismantle them. So yeah, I just sort of left them.
Okay, and so then the opportunity to write a movie story and then turn it into an actual event came about, and it was just fortuitous. Then you had the sets, you were able to combine the two.
Yeah. I had the costumes that I'd bought my dad, that they were custom made, and ages before that, and I sort of had those pieces, and I had different bits of tech, like the communicator and phase pistol and tricorder and stuff like that. And yeah, so I sort of had all the elements. I just had to sort of put them all together and do a bit more production design on it so it could be used for a film.
Yeah, but I mean, as far as props go, the uniforms and the weaponry and even the little computer monitors with the flashing lights and whatever is in the background, it all comes together and looks quite realistic. And it looks like you really did go to the sets of Enterprise and film on board. It's well done.
Thank you. I definitely paid attention when I was making those sets to the way that the Enterprise ones are designed. When they were auctioning off all the set pieces and stuff, I took pictures from the auctions and things like that and kind of measured them out as best I could. And there were also some some mods of games, Star Trek games, that I was able to pull the textures off the games and sort of work out what things were supposed to look like. So yeah, so that's what I did for those. But one of the benefits of, you know, both these films were sort of set on damaged ships is that because it's so sort of darkly lit, you can get away with things, you know, because I don't have $1 million budget and, you know, the set pieces, while they're made from, you know, pretty expensive wood, like it's not, you know, I'm not a professional carpenter and I don't have an art department and things like that. So from what I could achieve, you know, I lit the film accordingly, I guess. And so I think that's probably what lends it to looking, you know, accurate-ish. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll get to, we'll talk about the camera work and the editing in a short while, but we're kind of just dancing around it at the moment. But yeah, it is very realistic and very well done. You're in Perth in Western Australia. That's correct.
That's right. Yeah.
I guess Star Trek is pretty universal, but is there a big Star Trek following in that part of the world?
Not that I'm aware of. Certainly not in the way that there are dedicated Star Trek conventions like there are in America and like Germany and I'm presuming the UK. Like, do they have Star Trek? Yeah. Certainly not like that. I remember when I was really young, we went to go see Robert Picardo. Yeah, they sort of had like a one man convention, and you know there was enough people to sort of fill it out like a general convention hall. But I think the types of people, especially then, you know, you'd class as like nerds and things like that. So it's a very sort of specialized group of people. And so, you know, I didn't really have any friends that watched Star Trek. As far as my friends at primary school and high school were concerned, Star Trek is a joke. Like it's, you know, it's a very select type of people watch it.
I would agree. It's gone through a whole metamorphosis in so many people did regard it as something for a certain type of person, but it's actually getting cool now with the advent of this new Star Trek Discovery on TV. I don't know, have you seen any of that?
Yeah, and that's absolutely true. The amount of people that I know that have watched Discovery, but you know, I think Discovery, as an example, it's produced in a way that is relevant for TV now, just as the same way Star Trek was produced for TV in the 60s and you know, the Next Generation and things like that. It's a product of its time, and when, you know, especially kids look back on TV shows when they've got really high tech ones compared to 60s Star Trek, the connection doesn't work. And I think that's where the criticism is based, I would say.
Oh yeah, joining the dots is quite a difficult one. So, but for you, Enterprise was the first Star Trek that you saw, and it's heavily influenced what you did next.
Enterprise was the first one that I watched from start to finish, but I grew up watching Voyager. So my dad used to tape Voyager because it was given the sort of death slot on a Thursday night, you know, at midnight, and my dad used to tape it and we used to watch it the next day. But yeah, Voyager was the one that I loved as a kid. We, you know, dad would go to the video hire shop every month and the tape would come out and it was, you know, an overnight hire. So we had to watch both episodes that night and then he would bring it back before work the next morning. And yeah, it was a family thing. You know, I'm an only child, so I sat down with my mum and my dad and we watched Star Trek, and that carried through right to Enterprise. It became a bit harder to watch Enterprise because it wasn't on TV. The first season was on TV here, and then they just, you know, wasn't getting the ratings, so they killed it. And that was obviously the advent of being able to download things off the internet. That's how we saw it. One of my cousins used to download it and send it to us from the other side of Australia, because there was no access to it. So we used to just look forward to sitting down as a family and watching it, and that's how I grew up with Star Trek, basically.
So I'm watching The Needs of the Many, and we're coming back to this short film right now. And you did something amazing with the lead actress, who we'll talk about in a second. But comparing Needs of the Many to the current Star Trek Discovery show, you seem to have subliminally created Cadet Tilly before Cadet Tilly was ever invented, with Cadet Parker. She's just straight out of Academy, and she manages to solve a situation in a very definitive way. But that was interesting.
Yeah.
To have a cadet do what she did.
I think, you know, all the Star Trek shows sort of focus on the sort of senior staff of each show. So I think to be able to focus on some sort of minor characters, because you're essentially, what I find interesting now watching Star Trek is to sort of see what other people on board the ship do and how, you know, their work or whatever their roles are contribute to the sort of main event. And I think, you know, there's something interesting about sort of generic crewmen or things like that. As like, you know, the Next Generation episode, I think it's called Lower Decks, where they, you know, follow four crewmen. Like, that's quite, it's quite interesting to see the dynamic and how they view people higher up from them. So I guess that's why I wanted to focus for that on.
You also mentioned the number 47.
Yep. Section 47, I think it was. Yeah.
Did you do that deliberately, or you did that deliberately? I was wondering about that.
I think I've tried to incorporate it in both. I can't remember whether it actually survives in the second one, but yeah, no, definitely.
Good reference. One of our regular contributors to Track of M and a huge Star Trek fan and a writer of a lot of Star Trek books and is Larry Nemechek. He has a podcast, a subscription podcast, which is called Portal 47, which so that's a big thing for Larry. Okay. Also, I noticed that there's no mention of the ship that they're on in Needs of the Many, but there is a dedication plaque that is briefly seen. And again, it was the Endeavor. And is there a reference there?
Funnily enough, so the reason why I didn't mention the ship, and it was only on the dedication plaque, but I didn't realize how prominently featured it ended up being. It was just supposed to be in the background, but I think it's in the background of every single, like, close-up or mid-shot of me. You know, it's in the background, which is unfortunate because it was only supposed to be sort of a throwaway thing. But I didn't have the patches for the ship, so I ended up using, I think it's the Jupiter Station patch on their uniforms, just because I didn't want it to be on Enterprise or Columbia. I wanted it to be on another ship. And so, yeah, I tried to follow the naming of the Enterprise era ship. So it's Enterprise, Columbia, Challenger, Discovery, I think it's Endeavor and Atlantis.
You got me. No, I was thinking more in terms of Captain Cook.
Oh, no. There wasn't a Captain Cook. It was literally just because the space shuttles, that's their naming order, and the Enterprise NX-01 ships follow that order. So that's why they're named like that. But I did realize I made an error in, I think it said NX-05, and I don't think it's supposed to be NX-05. But I can give you some exclusive information for our next project, because the events of Needs of the Many will be referenced in the next film. So we'll see what the outcome of that. What of Needs of the Many has on the following film. Sorry.
Okay. Well, I just thought it was a good Australian reference.
I didn't even think of that. That's a bit sad. Yeah. but the quote I think was from Captain Cook, I think, as well. So yeah.
Okay, and let's talk about Harriet Fettes, because I'm reading through some of the comments you made. And you chose her, A, because she's a good friend, and B, because she's a terrific actress. She gave a great performance. How is it that you ended up winning awards? You were nominated for an award, and she picked up an award too. And this all apparently came as a complete surprise to you.
well, it came as a surprise because I wasn't aware that there was even an award sort of thing for Star Trek fan films. But yeah, I wrote the story for Harriet in mind, just because in the last couple of 5 years of knowing her, I was in a lot of theater shows with her, and I was aware that she would always be cast in specific roles as sort of this, not damsel, but we'll use the word damsel, sort of female character. And I think she's a really good actress, and if you give her a bit of meat, she will run with it. And so I wrote it for her in mind, and I wouldn't have done it, honestly, would not have done the film if she didn't agree to do it. And she, you know, I made sure that I wrote it to play to her strengths. And the character, I would say, is a bit like her as a person. So I tried to emulate her own sort of speaking pattern, and that made it, I guess, a more honest performance. And that's why I've said I'm so proud that, if anything, she won that award, because she absolutely deserved it. That film was about her as much as I was in it. And I was also nominated for that same award and didn't win. But that aside, no, I'm so proud of her, you know, as my friend and as an actor in that film, to win that.
Yeah. So let's just talk about the awards per se, because tell us how you heard about the fact that you won an award, and then you went, oh, that's great. And then you realized what competition you were up against, not knowing that you'd been in the competition in the first place, but when you realized who had been the other nominees, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is. So I got a Facebook message from one of the organizers of the awards after it happened, and they said, oh, I'm not sure if you're aware, but you've won 2 awards. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know that there was an awards thing, and I didn't even know we were nominated. And it turned out we were nominated for 7 categories. And yeah, to win, especially for Harriet to win up against, I'm not sure whether it was just Best Actress or whether it was Best Actor as well, but to go up against the cast of Star Trek Continues in particular, I was very, very pleased about, because actually the cast actually came to Perth, and I've met them, and I love Star Trek Continues. One of the reasons why I did this was because how much I love Star Trek Continues, and just how they want to emulate the 60s style of Star Trek. I wanted to emulate the 2000s style of Enterprise. And so, yeah, really big inspiration. And to be up against them and to win, especially the acting award over them, is absolutely amazing. So yeah, it's a good, in good company. Absolutely.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Okay. So you then move on to making, another movie, called The Derelict. So what was the transition between the first movie, Needs of the Many, and then The Derelict? What brought you around to the thinking, okay, I'm going to make another movie, so let's do another Enterprise style movie, and this one's even twice as long as the other one.
I was working on a Doctor Who spin-off, like Kickstarter thing, at the end of 2016, and for various reasons that didn't go ahead, and I did sort of my own short film at the start of this year, and as very proud and as very personal the script was, it didn't really get anywhere. It didn't reach an audience, and yeah, I just sort of remembered the amazing positive reception that I got for my Star Trek film and thought, why not? And especially because we won those awards, I was working on a draft of that script the day after I found out. I was working on the script the day before I found out, sorry. And it almost seemed like, oh, maybe it's a sign that I should do another one. So yeah, so I also had another friend who I wanted to write a script for as well, and it was supposed to be a pirate story at sea, basically, and she was going to be this pirate queen that was pillaging ships, and she would come up against this stowaway character that was a bit sort of insane. But every time I wrote that story, it just came back to a Star Trek story, which was very odd because the Needs of the Many was the exact opposite. It was just a general story that ended up being a Star Trek story, and so I sort of shelved this idea until, you know, I left the Sarah Jane Investigates Kickstarter thing, and then I won those awards, and then I I sort of unearthed that and started writing. And so that's basically how it came about.
It's amazing. So we've got a mad, crazy occupant on board a cargo ship. I think it's called the North Star. No, it wasn't the North. Was it the North Star?
Yeah, that's the North Star, yeah.
It's the North Star. And he's gone. We don't know why he's crazy. He just inhaled some substance and...
Well, so the idea is that he says in the film that, to give it a bit wider context, and it will maybe show a bit of a through line that will hopefully be running through all the films that we do in future. He says that his family and his crew and his ship were attacked in an incident that had nothing to do with them. And the idea is that, which you sort of see at the end of Enterprise, is that the Romulans are attacking cargo ships. So we hear in Enterprise right at the end that one of their cargo ships has been destroyed and they're trying to find out why. And so the idea is that this character has lost his ship and found himself at port somewhere, was rescued by the crew of the North Star, and then because he's just such a damaged individual, he's had his absolute life ripped from him and he's so angry that he's constantly losing and having constantly things being taken away from him. That his only, in his mind, his only rationale is to take and take and take until ultimately he dies, basically. So the main, one of the things that we sort of realized as we were working through workshopping the script after it was cast was that we needed to find a truth as to why this person behaves the way they do. Because it's very easy to say, oh, well, he's crazy, so that's what crazy people do. But we really wanted to explore this idea that, yeah, this guy is actually mentally ill, that he's had such devastating things happen to him. And as a result, this is the way he is. And it was important to me, especially in his reactions and his interactions with the character of Fletcher, that she never yells at him. She's always calm and rational. She's always trying to reason with him. She's always trying to empathize with him, not sympathize, empathize, to see his points of view. And she's constantly trying to save him. And her journey in this film is that she's so determined to save someone that in the end she has to kill him because he's going to endanger her crew. And so, yeah, we were very careful about how we portrayed mental illness and how we approached someone with mental illness. So, yeah.
Well, he was being pretty extreme. He wasn't... I mean, he was basically murdering everybody. It's a self-defense mechanism that she went for. I mean, he just brought in a presumed dead crew member, her crewmate, and now he was coming for her, so she had no choice. So she plasmaed him. Now, it was great effects, by the way. The lighting bouncing off everything. I mean, how did you achieve that? Because it's quite effective.
That one there, half of it was just practical. So it was a really high-powered torch and, you know, shot from different angles to show that effect of the light bouncing off him and on the environment. But also our cinematographer and camera operator, who was also our color gradist, Clayton, he did some of those special effects. So the camera shake. And it looks really disturbing, especially when it starts. Like it looks intense. And so, yeah, so it was a combination of practical effects and then in-camera effects, I should say, and then a bit of sort of CGI special effects afterwards.
Okay. So coming back to the start of everything, did you go to did you do media studies at college? Did you study film and filming techniques? So that's your...
Yeah, so I started university in 2011, and I graduated in 2013 with a Bachelor of Media and specializing in screen production. And since then... Among other things, I've been working as a freelance filmmaker in Perth. And the majority of the work is sort of client-based promotional content. So I'm not usually on like film sets or amongst the sort of Eastern States film industry. It's very much promo content. So to sort of break that up, that's, I guess, why I've started making short films.
I also noticed that you're very fortunate with your initials, which is AV. And... you've incorporated that in your business card. So that worked out too. Everything seems to be going in your direction. That's great.
Yeah. Although, funnily enough, when I started designing that logo and I started using it, my dad was watching an episode of UFO And in the background in an office in UFO, that AV logo, exactly the same way, is flipped. So it's VA in the back of the wall. And I was so upset. Someone else had thought of it, but yeah.
No, it's still cool. Why not? What are your long-term goals in terms of filmmaking? I mean, you obviously want to break into broader mainstream writing, filming, you know, production. I'm assuming that's where you want to go.
Yeah, so my goal is actually, I really wanted to be an actor, but my parents told me that I should get my degree first. So once I have a degree, I can get whatever job I want. So I sort of done that, and I've been working as well as doing freelance film work, as working in events work as well. But my goal at the moment is to go to, we have a specialized performing arts school in WA called Whopper. So my goal really is to actually do screen acting at Whopper and then sort of progress, hopefully, to be a screen actor, because that has really been my sole interest. So yeah, but for the last couple of years, I have been working as a filmmaker. But I find the work that I do get, especially for the type of work it is, it's very draining and very exhausting, and often clients don't realize the amount of effort that goes into producing a piece of content. And unfortunately for the majority, they're not very interested in paying on time. And when you're running your own business and you're self-employed and it's your bread and butter, having to chase up things for months sometimes is not a good way to live. And so for the last year, I've realized that as much as I love filmmaking, it either needs to be in like an industry level or not at all. So I've sort of moved off that, and at the moment I want to focus on screen acting.
Well, that seems to be a universal story in the world of financing your projects. You mentioned Whopper. Is that Peter Jackson related?
Not Peter Jackson, Hugh Jackman related.
I was thinking of Lord of the Rings director.
No, that's Weta Studio.
Weta. I'm cutting this bit out of the interview. The name was familiar, and then I was thinking, where have I heard that before? You've surrounded yourself with a pretty good filming crew. Are they relatives, friends? I mean, because they're all very skilled at what they do, whether it's lighting, camera work. Tell us more about your camera guy, because, you know, he did some tremendous work.
So the first film, Needs of the Many, that was one that I shot myself. And my friend, Andrew David, who works for he works for a practical special effects company. So they design prosthetics and sort of casualty pieces for medical training and for army training. So he was someone that I used to do special effects for that first film, and I brought him across for the second one. And so the second one, because it was sort of going to be even more scopier, I wanted to get one of my friends who I went to uni with, Clayton, and he works as a cinematographer across Australia. And he usually focuses on music videos. So he definitely has a talent for sort of short form, because that's the majority of work that he does, or certainly that I'm aware that he does. And he has a great eye for lighting and a great eye for framing shots and things like that. And so he's an absolute one-man band, absolute benefit, especially, you know, hopefully upping the ante in the second film in terms of quality.
And the other people who work with you, who lit the sets or did the sound, how did that, who are they, those people?
Oh, so for the most part, one of my friends helped me out doing the sound, but just recording it. He wasn't specialized in it. He just sort of helped out. And as I said, certainly in terms of like camera and lighting, Clayton was a one-man band for that one. But also I have two great parents who are extremely patient and extremely supportive of what I do. My mum was amazing at doing costume design, and we sort of focused quite a bit on researching the type of civilian clothes that civilians would wear in Enterprise and sort of shopping for bits and pieces for that. But also altering the Starfleet costumes to make them a bit more accurate and to the time period that I want to set them. So like adding epaulets and different patches and changing them, altering them for each actor and adding sort of equipment loops and things like that. So yeah, mum and dad definitely.
Yeah, good. Kudos. The uniform accuracy is very, very helpful. And what makes a lot of fan movies more acceptable in a way is what the cast are wearing. And your uniforms certainly seem to be tailor-made. I think that's the correct word to use, tailor-made, because some people tend to buy off-the-shelf uniforms that don't quite fit or too tight, too loose. And it kind of takes away from the story they're telling, because you can't help but be critical. But in the case of the people wearing your uniforms, they looked as if they belonged in them.
Yeah.
Wore them all the time. That was their life.
Yeah, well, we tried very hard to make sure that they were form-fitting and that they were also practical in how they move and things like that. But you're absolutely right. And at that time, when I bought them, there weren't any commercially available Enterprise costumes. Now there are, and they're $500 American, so they're quite expensive.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, in these cases, you just have to work with what you've got and try and make the best of them.
Yeah. Tell me, are you going to be building more extensions to your sets? You know, so, or I'm assuming that you've already mentioned you're going to do another Star Trek based movie, but will that involve building more sets, like a bridge maybe scene or sick bay type room?
So not for the next one. The next one's going to be set. There are two sets that are built, but it's not in any sort of ship or anything like that. One of them is a industrial marketplace, and the next part of it takes place in a cell, basically. So the next one will be probably less Starfleet-y. There'll certainly be less focus on the Starfleet elements, but hopefully that will make it more interesting. It will definitely be a different side to Star Trek, hopefully. And I'm sure that will confuse and shock some people, but it's a matter of certainly for me, especially in, you know, doing short form, because, you know, I'm limited at the moment of doing 15-minute films, and so as much as they will again be sort of a two-piece character dialogue, yeah, trying to do things different and to make them different and unique and explore the Star Trek universe. But yeah, so the next one will be sort of off-world, and then the next two, hopefully, one of them will be set on a bridge, and the one after that will be set on like a installation or a starbase.
Okay, so when these films, Needs of the Many and The Derelict, if I say suddenly surfaced, they've been around for a while, but suddenly they came into the consciousness of Star Trek fans, and they drew a lot of attention. So you kind of went from zero to hero in a very short space of time. What was that like?
It's slightly a bit daunting, especially for The Derelict, because at one point it literally jumped from 5,000 views to 15,000 views virtually overnight, and it's a bit scary, especially how that can happen. It's crazy. But, I mean, when we did Knees of the Many and that was released, it wasn't until about 6 months later that it sort of became prevalent. And then again, I guess the sort of the same thing with this one, you know, it was released in late August or something like that. And then it sort of has had a bit of a resurgence now. But yeah, it is daunting. And as you know, anything creative that you put into a public domain, you are going to get a lot of feedback. But for me, the benefit of releasing it when it was that I posted it on a Star Trek sort of fan film forum and got a lot of constructive criticism. The first one was like amazing how much positive feedback I got. And the second one, I got positive feedback and I got constructive criticism. And it's great to get them from your peers, essentially, you know, people that are making fan films or, you know, continuously watch fan films, and they sort of know what they're looking for. And they're, you know, kind of hardcore Star Trek fans. So they know what they like and they know what they don't like. So that's really good. But as you sort of get into more mainstream, as more people watch it, I guess you're going to get all sorts of criticism. You know, you're going to get universal praise, you're going to get people nitpicking, like trivia and things like that.
It's inevitable, but as they say, you know, there's no such thing as bad publicity, so the more people who see it,
yeah, and you know, no one's above criticism, and you kind of have to have a bit thick skin, especially, you know, with the internet, where people from all over behind a keyboard can write all sorts of things. And I think recently, especially with a lot of views and some of the comments, you kind of when you get something that's a bit negative or a bit odd, you kind of have to take a step back. And I, you know, as much as I would love to reply to everybody's comments, and that's certainly what I did at the start, sometimes it's better not to get into a discussion with people.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you got the kind of criticism that J.J. Abrams got, and there was certainly an amazing amount of negative criticism for his movies, his take on Star Trek, as well as good. But, you know, if you had to take the negative stuff, I think you'd just lock yourself away somewhere.
Yeah, and I think you know, for me, especially when I'm watching fan films, they are still fan films. They're not professional films. As much as you can, you know, get good actors and you can get good crew and stuff like that, they are still, that's what they are. Call it what it is. It is a fan film. And it's not, for the most part, people make fan films because they make it for themselves and, you know, for their friends, you know, because they want to do something and they want to show other people, but it's not necessarily made for an audience. And so, yeah, sometimes you get comments that are just out of ignorance, really, I guess, in a way. I often find people commenting about the length of the story or you know, there wasn't enough time to expand the story. And that's not my fault. That's unfortunately the guidelines that we've been presented, but that's just someone that's not aware of that. That's a little bit frustrating, but there's, you know, nothing I can do about that.
Yeah, some of the comments I see on various other subject matter coming through Facebook or whatever, I often think, I wish Facebook would make you I wish Facebook would make you put your age in brackets at the end of your comment. So I know it's coming from some 10-year-old kid or some, you know, 44-year-old adult, because some of the comments are just so bizarre. You wonder, who are these people and what do they do?
But I mean, especially in things where there is a big fandom, a bit like Doctor Who as well. And as I said, I was working on a Doctor Who spin-off series, and I got, as soon as I released that Kickstarter, I got trolled.
Wow.
By people who are a lot older than me and who also do similar things and who should know better. But that's what passionate people are like, especially in fandoms. And unfortunately, that's the world we live in.
I know. Okay. You got interviewed by Matt Miller. Were you surprised when did you contact him or did he contact you?
No, he contacted me. I maybe I'm very ignorant, but I wasn't aware of a lot of Star Trek sort of media sources and things like that. So yeah, I was very surprised to hear from him and thrilled to be interviewed. I guess, you know, it's nice that people, I guess, notice things and are able to bring things to a wider audience, exactly like the Trek fan film factor, you know, has brought my film to a large audience. I think, you know, it's very nice.
Okay. Well, all good things will happen for you, Aaron.
Fingers crossed.
Trek reference, I think. Okay. Well, listen, I'm going to say it's been great having you on Continuing Mission today. It's great learning everything there is to know about your two movies and what your intended plans are for the future. But for those of who don't know much about you, where can people find you on the internet?
So the best place probably is facebook.com/AV Filmmaker, or you can search Aaron Van Der Clay Filmmaker. Or if you just go and Google Needs of the Many or The Derelict, a Star Trek fan production, you will most likely find me somehow.
And are you on Twitter as well, or do you?
Oh, yes, I'm on Twitter. I am AJV1993 on Twitter. So, yeah, feel free to tweet.
Okay. It's been fantastic talking with you, and I'm looking forward to your next production. And I'm wishing you all the very best for the future. In the world of Star Trek, it'd be great to see your name hitting the big time one day soon. And why not?
Thank you so much. I'm absolutely thrilled to be interviewed.
But as a filmmaker, your first and foremost passion is filmmaking. And we wish you every success in that and hope that your production company takes off.
That'd be amazing. I pray and look forward to that day.
Okay. So I'm going to wish you, it's evening time where you are in Australia. It's morning time or midday where I am in the UK. So I'm going to wish you a good evening And hopefully we'll get to talk with you again at some time, maybe in about a year's time. We'll maybe do a follow-up to see how far you down the path you've gone and do a follow-up with you.
Absolutely. Hopefully there's going to be a couple more films released as well, so we'll have something new to talk about.
Yes. Thanks, Aaron. Thanks for being on
Thank you very much.
Mission today. So you really do need to see these two short films to appreciate the quality and the acting and everything that has gone with it. You will get the impression that they are almost like deleted scenes from episodes of Enterprise. They really are that good. So check out Adam Van de Klee's work. The movies are called Derelict and The Needs of the Many. And you, again, as I said, you will find him on YouTube. And if you can, drop Aaron some kind of a message to encourage him and let him know that you're watching his movies and that you really appreciate the work he's done so far, because he is in the process of producing more work and it is sure to please us all. So it's been great fun talking with Adam Van de Klee today, but it isn't the only thing we've been talking about on the network, so here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Fan consensus has sort of said, look, third season is terrible and awful and woeful, and a lot of it is. But you go back and you watch it, and there's a lot of it that carries over. Like, there's a lot of stuff that is, I think of, like, as quintessentially Star Trek. That sort of you see develop over the course of the third season.
The 602 Club.
There was a lot of screaming involved. I'll start with. You know what I'm talking about.
Snowball! Snowball! Snowball!
Yes. No, I know what you mean.
No, a lot of. Oh my god, it's a Demogorgon!
Warp 5.
He had to learn to not interfere. And it's painful, and that's what makes it such a powerful episode, so this is definitely a see it.
Okay, next.
All right, Sleeping Dogs. While exploring a gas...
Skip it.
Okay. All right, so Shadows of Bataan... I think we already know what this one is.
keep going with the Sleeping Dogs.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
It's like when Tyler was... you know, explaining the situation and seeing it. And I mean, and he was explaining it to Tyler. It's like he was almost apologizing for it. Like, I had to do this to save my life and I'm still alive because I did this. But is he suffering guilt for that?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad or Apple TV or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave a star rating and a written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link. Now, we'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us email, you can use the form on our website at trekfm.com/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Continuing Mission. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at trekfm. And on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. I can be found on the Babel Conference if you want to pay attention to some of the crazy stuff that I say and do on there. On Twitter, I can be found at Shamrock165. If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. Available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. So before we end today, I would like to thank our founder and publisher, C. Brian Jones, without whom Trek FM would not exist. I would also like to thank our executive producers, Ken Tripp and Matt Rushing, and Aaron Harvey, our excellent and incredibly talented art director. All these people are responsible for keeping the entire world of Trek FM alive and bringing it to you each week. You've been listening to Continuing Mission. I'm Tony Robinson. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in today. Hope you enjoyed the show. And I look forward to having you back for the next Continuing Mission. Thank you.